Hello and welcome to the latest BRC Trade Podcast. I'm William Madison. It's springtime here in London, but winter seems to be beckoning for Arlene Foster's leadership in Northern Ireland. So what does that mean for the protocol on Ireland and Northern Ireland? On the flip side, it's sunny and summery in Brussels now towards the trade and cooperation agreement with the UK, which has now been ratified. We'll talk about all this and more, but first, as usual, I'm joined by William Bain, our trade policy expert from Glasgow, in which four seasons can come in a single day. William, how are you?
Fine. So far, we're only two seasons in.
Oh, lovely. And also joined by the ever-seasonal Aidan Connolly, director of the NIRC, who I'm told will be running the Belfast Half Marathon tomorrow. Aidan, how is race prep going?
It's going absolutely terrible. I've had a sore stomach all week, and I'm probably going to get that by 3 mile and collapse. No, I'm actually looking forward to it. So I have a half marathon tomorrow, and then I have one in June, and I have one in July, and then I have a full marathon in September. And I don't know why I'm doing it. I'm thinking of getting someone to run in front of me with a kebab on their back, and maybe I'll make some good time.
Lovely. So kicking into the questions straight away, Aidan, starting with you. Since we last spoke, you've taken up a role as one of the UK Trade Business Commission members. So how does that fit with what Northern Ireland business is seeking to do in terms of compliance negotiations in relation to the protocol?
So, yes, I have been taking on the privilege of being a commissioner for the UK Trade and Business Commission. And it's absolutely privileged to be asked. I am there as the Northern Ireland Commissioner, the Commissioner for Consumers, and the Commissioner, obviously, of Retail. So what the Commission will be doing is to giving a bit of scrutiny to those trade deals which have been done. So we're thinking about the withdrawal agreement, we're thinking about the Northern Ireland Protocol, we're thinking about the TCA, the Trade and Cooperation Agreement. But we're also thinking of some of those other rollover deals, and what way are they different, those slight differences, which actually can mean a lot as far as profit margins for both business and then the end cost for consumers. We're also looking into those trade deals that could happen over this next wee while. You know, there are CTPPT and lots of other trade deals that the UK is looking at. What it does, you have to remember that the UK Parliament actually voted to give itself less powers of scrutinising trade deals, which kind of is an anathema to me. A lot of people, you know, said one of the reasons for Brexit is because they didn't get the chance to scrutinise the trade deals that would affect the UK because they were done through Europe. And then the kind of vote to give themselves less power to scrutinise trade deals. But anyway, the Commission will be providing that sort of scrutiny, and we have lots of different interests around the table, and lots of different MPs from different parties, all of the major parties, and some of the Welsh parties, the Scottish, and of course from Northern Ireland as well, to make sure that the devolved angle is looked at. The last session, we had a wonderful speaker from the British Retail Consortium. I can't remember his name now. Scottish fellow, very good looking. Yes, William was in front of us last week or this week, and William was explaining the needs that there are, the things that would make it better for Northern Ireland business, such as an auditable and certified supply chain. Things like a veterinary agreement that would remove around 80% of the SPS checks and paperwork. But also we were hearing about things like British food producers and how hard it is to export, how hard it is for SMEs, and the lack of education that there was leading up to the end of the transition period. The government spent millions and millions of pounds telling people to get ready to trade with Europe, and they didn't spend a single penny telling people to get ready to trade with Northern Ireland. And I think that's where we're kind of have to get to in the very, very short term, is to educate suppliers, educate couriers, educate businesses, small and large, that Northern Ireland is open for business. And actually, because of the derogations that are in place, because of those grace periods which have been extended, there's not much difference that you have to do, and you can still easily trade with both Northern Ireland businesses and, of course, with Northern Ireland consumers.
So what's the current state of play with both the UK government and the European Commission on the easements, which retailers have been working under since January? And to that, do we have any updates on customs and goods at risk of entering the EU single market?
Well, as you know, the UK government took the decision to unilaterally extend those grace periods, not only on the SPS stuff and the supermarket grace periods, as they are called, although they are much wider than just supermarkets, but also on things like parcels, which have been extended to the 1st of November. Now, all those things are wonderful. All those things keep flowing, but it doesn't take away from our base needs. So our base needs continue to be stability, and that comes from an extension of the grace periods. Now, we've got that from the UK, but the EU has yet to formally sign off on that. They've yet to agree that it can happen. Now, we had said that we didn't agree with how it was done, but we agreed with the substance. And in fact, that unilateral decision was taken on the Wednesday, and the Friday after that, there would have been decisions that needed to be taken that would have really affected food supply chains for Northern Ireland. So it had to be taken. Would have been better if it had been taken bilaterally. It would have been better if it happened at the Joint Committee. But that just didn't happen. So things have trundled on as they were. But that leads us to our next big ask, and that's for certainty. And that's a long-term solution that is delivered with business, not done to business. And we're not there yet. And we have a very, very short space of time to get there. And we have until the 1st of October when the phasing in starts. And we really need to see the what's down on paper very, very quickly. And the reason is we cannot have another 11th hour decision. You know, it was great what we got on the 8th of December, but we were able to tell them on the 10th of December that it wouldn't be long enough, that the grace period wouldn't be long enough until the 1st of April. Quite frankly, because we understand what has to be done. We understand how long it takes to move these things. We understand how long it takes to rearm supply chains. We understand how much time it needs to train everyone from the person who takes the order to the person who designs the website, right through to the person who delivers the order and everyone in between. Where we are with that long-term solution, we simply don't know what is in the minds of the EU and the UK, but what we have put forward is a series of simplifications. And at the bottom of that, you have digitization. We know that DEFRA are working on this digital assistance scheme. And that digital assistance scheme, you know, will remove the need for lots of pieces of paper. It all goes digital. However, if it's going to do anything more than just save a few trees, then we need to be more ambitious, and we need the UK government to continue to be more ambitious on this. So what we're asking them for is an audited and certified supply chain, and that you can get if you use the information that's going through the digital assistance scheme as an evidence base. And you say to the EU, look, this is the food that's moving. This is what it's made of. This is where it's going. This is where it's going to be sold. And therefore, it is of no risk to the EU single market, no risk to the customs union. And therefore, we can have that sort of trusted trader, audited and certified supply chain with a green channel, which means we can quickly pass through ports, and we can keep the just-in-time supply chain alive. Because you've got to remember, just-in-time is not just about speed, it's about removing friction and therefore removing cost. On the other side of things, we can, again, with simplicity, we can get a veterinary agreement now. Politically, that's a bit of a bitter pill to swallow for some people, but it does remove about 80% of the problem and when it comes to SPS. And people are talking about whether it's New Zealand, whether it's Swiss style. What we really need is a pragmatic and proportionate response and a veterinary agreement that is a Northern Ireland style veterinary agreement that suits the minuscule amount of risk that there is to the single market and the customs union for retail goods that are going into Northern Ireland. Last thing is, this all has to be done affordably to keep business competitive. And you got to remember, retail is very high volume, low profit margin, but also to keep its cost down for the Northern Ireland consumer who have half of the discretionary income. Now, we do know that the UK has put forward a roadmap, and that roadmap has been given to the EU. We do know that the EU has now sent that, has written a draft response and has shared that with member states, and member states are currently looking at that and will respond in good time. And hopefully then business like ourselves will get to see what is on those pieces of paper. So there is progress being made, but we've yet to see what's on it. We don't know if it's going to work. And again, it goes back to that principle that this all has to be done with business, not to business. So we wait with bated breath to see what exactly the EU and the UK are going to come up with, but it needs to be workable.
Yes, indeed. Also, Northern Ireland politics has taken an unexpected turn with the leadership convulsions within the DUP. So it looks now like a new leader in place by the end of May and a new Northern Ireland First Minister by the end of June. What is this likely to mean for the negotiations and the implementation of the protocol? And further to that, what are your thoughts on the potential for devolved institutions collapsing?
Well, aren't you just a little ray of sunshine with that question? I think it's like everywhere else in the world goes, yeah, we've got a really mad political system and things aren't working out in Northern Ireland. Goes, right, hold my beer. The way that things kind of work here in Northern Ireland is we kind of get worried if there isn't a crisis because it means there's one just around the corner. And that's where we are. You know, we have very good relations with Mrs. Foster. We have done for a long while. We will, again, have very good relations with whoever comes in next. I think, though, the instability and the protocol, I'm sure, has added to that instability, is worrying in the fact that, you know, does this mean that there is a split within the DUP? Does this mean that there will be votes lost at the DUP? Does this mean that the one thing that is certain in all of this is we are now very much in election mode. And that election mode started a couple of months ago when an opinion poll came out and said that the DUP with the lowest voting preference for 21 years, they were down to 19%. And the TUV, who's sort of the harder line unionist, traditional unionist voice, were at 9, almost 10%. And that really worried them, because not only did it mean that they were losing votes, but it meant that there could be and still could be a Sinn Féin First Minister for a lot of the DUP that would be unpalatable. If you asked me at the start of the week how close we were to the Assembly falling in this next 18 months, I would have said probably about 2 out of 10, because there's always a slight chance. Now, you know, we're probably somewhere around 7.5 out of 10. And that could well go down very, very quickly because, you know, things settle down and you get into that political rhythm. But it's all up in the air at the moment. Front runners at the moment are Gavin Robinson MP and Geoffrey Donaldson MP and Edwin Poots. Edwin, we've done a lot of work with over the years as far as Department of Health, DERA, that's Department of Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs in Northern Ireland. We regularly talk to Sir Geoffrey through the Northern Ireland Business Practice Working Group, and we have a great relationship with Gavin. However, if any of the MPs do come back to be the leader of the DUP, there's a big question whether or not they would be First Minister, because they wouldn't have to be an MLA to be First Minister. Therefore, do they resign their seat and someone resigns in Stormont and they're co-opted in? Because you've got to remember, it's not a by-election if an MLA resigns co-opting, and that's in the Good Friday Agreement to allow people to not displace the makeup of the Assembly during a mandate and to keep some stability. But it does then mean that there would be a by-election in either Lagan Valley, if it was Sir Geoffrey, or East Belfast, if it were Gavin Robinson. Now, I think that Gavin probably won't stand. He's got an awful lot going on anyway. But the front runner would have to be Edwin Poots at the minute. The big thing is, for us, it really doesn't matter who's in. We will continue to work with him, and we will continue to represent members and the retail industry.
William, turning to you now, the European Parliament this week ratified the Trade and Cooperation Agreement. Were there any surprises with some of the conditions attached? How will the agreement be monitored and for businesses to feed in now? Is it fully up and running?
Yes. So we saw just five MEPs voting against the TCA in the vote in Brussels earlier this week. And it proceeded very smoothly into fully ratified effect. So it will take legal effect from the 1st of May 2021. And of course, this is nearly 5 years after the referendum itself was held. And this is the sort of final legal set of dotted I's and crossed T's in terms of that future relationship, an extraordinary period. So we now have what's known as a legally scrubbed text from the EU. And what has happened is that there's been a renumbering of the articles within the agreement, which replaces the previous naming from the text on Boxing Day. So this is the final text now, which companies, their legal teams, general counsel should be referring to rather than the December text. There were some additions. So one of the decisions that accompanied the making of the agreement was, this really came from the Parliament, that in terms of aspects like criminal and justice cooperation issues, if the UK decides to pull out of the European Convention on Human Rights, or even if a future government decided to gut the Human Rights Act, those would be criteria that the EU could use to suspend that part of cooperation. So that was an interesting aspect. Didn't make it into the final TCA text, but the European Parliament made it a condition of ratification in the first place. In terms of what the TCA does, it creates a series of bodies. And I think one of the things that's important for business is to be realistic about the functions and the workings of these bodies. So there's going to be a series of around 20 sectoral committees set up, some dealing with areas like customs, some with rules of origin, some on technical barriers to trade. Now, these are not really going to be fora to relitigate the negotiations or indeed to really lobby in any substantive sense if business wants to see any additions to what's in the TCA to make life a little bit easier. These committees really are just looking at the sort of the technical compliance with what has been agreed in the text for the chapter that the committee is responsible for. And so it will mainly be looking at sort of reporting, technical issues, maybe IT issues, not really on policy. And so I think that's important to communicate. However, there are some other bodies created by the TCA, which clearly do have much more of an external remit. There is a trade committee, which is going to sit underneath the Partnership Council. It'd be interesting to see how open that trade committee is. The Partnership Council, of course, is the main body made up of a co-chair from each side, Lord Frost, in terms of the UK side, Vice President Maros Šefčovič from the European Commission side. And that is the clearinghouse, if you like, that if any keyhole surgery was needed to the TCA or any of its annexes, that could be made there. But again, I think it's important just to temper expectations here, because the Partnership Council's role is not to constantly revise, constantly update the agreed treaty text. That process really is going to be for the five-year review, the first one of which would start in 2026, now the middle of 2026. So again, I think we've got to be careful that there are all sorts of areas where business is going to want to see some improvements, some little additions, perhaps some side deals. It is possible that some of these could be done in the medium term, before the five-year review, but they would have to be very self-contained in their effects in order to get through the Partnership Council. But I think the important thing is, once these bodies are created, they will provide a forum for engagement. There is an annual engagement with civic society and businesses that's laid down within the TCA, and other forms of business engagement as well. So I'm pretty sure that the BRC, many of its peers in the wider business community, and indeed its members, will want to avail of these opportunities pretty early on.
So in terms of the prospect of future trade agreements, what is the summer likely to bring in terms of the UK's discussions with Australia, New Zealand, the Indo-Pacific, and also the US?
Yeah, so it could well be the summer of trade. What we know in terms of the Australia-UK negotiations, the Trade Minister Dan Tihar was over last week, meeting with Liz Truss. And after that, there was a statement issued by Liz Truss, really sort of signalling that we could expect an agreement in principle, not a full FTA, but an agreement in principle to be reached as early as June. And I think that shows that the negotiations are proceeding at a good lick. I think in terms of New Zealand, the agreement may be a little bit more ambitious with New Zealand, with, I think, the scope to do perhaps a bit more on green goods, to make it quite a progressive agreement in terms of climate change and the environment. So that may take a little bit longer, but again, anticipated that agreement in principle is attainable by this summer. So going to be busy on that front. We know that the UK government has also got to produce a statement of its objectives in terms of CPTPP accession. That's the 11 country block with which, if an Australia and New Zealand deal were reached, the UK would have deals with 9 of the 11 members. But it wants to join this for geopolitical reasons, as well as the possibility for enhanced digital trade and enhanced accumulation provisions on rules of origin among the members of it. So we expect to see more of its objectives and to consult upon those within the coming weeks. Of course, we're still, I think, analysing what the government's integrated review means for trade policy. Some hints, but perhaps the substance will crystallise in the coming weeks. So we know the government wants to enhance UK trade with the Indo-Pacific region. CPTPP accession is one part of that. But what might the government seek to aim for in terms of trade with India? A country which has historically made very few trade agreements, but with whom there is a great deal amount of UK-India trade. So that will be something to watch over the coming weeks and months. And then I think also you have the elephant in the room. We may talk a little later about the US tariff consultation, but you also have the scenario of the negotiations between the UK and the US. And prior to the change in administration, we were being told that, you know, there had been agreement on various points, that some chapters were ready for sign-off, that other proposals had been tabled, that the vast majority of the text had at least been tabled. But of course, the incoming US trade representative, Catherine Tai, has made it clear she wants to do a real stock take about what was done between the Trump administration and the UK government. And the priorities of the US administration may differ from that of its predecessors. So it looks likely that the UK-US talks will be a good deal more protracted. Could take at least a couple of years longer than perhaps some ministers in Whitehall would have hoped for.
And what are the wider trends happening in the trade world, given vaccine exports are still a problem in some areas? Is that affecting wider trade flows?
Well, we've seen in the last couple of days the issue of patents coming to the fore around vaccination, the principle that no one is safe until everyone is safe, that people in the Southern Hemisphere need to have good access to vaccines on the same basis that people in Europe and North America are going to have. And I think that feeds into what is happening at the WTO. And some key appointments were made this week by WTO Director General Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala to her key team. And of course, she spoke at the EU's Trade Day event, virtual Trade Day event on Monday about the prospects for reform at the WTO, both in terms of some of the decision-making processes, so the appellate body, which has been in disuse now for almost 2 years and really damaged the ability to enforce a rules-based order in terms of trade. And that can lead to more protectionism and more wildcat tariffs. But of course, you know, we're also looking to what the WTO might agree in terms of, if not an agreement amongst all its members, then one amongst a great many members in terms of things like e-commerce, updating the rule book to allow retailers to sell to customers among a much broader swathe of the globe than is the case at the moment. So that's a key thing which the Director General said was on her to-do list this year. Alongside that, the issue of fisheries subsidies that can impact the price of fish on our plates and in the supermarkets, and also to do more around technical barriers to trade and, as we say, the rules on patents and some medicines, looking at some waivers from the TRIPS agreement. So a very packed agenda in Geneva. Of course, we're also waiting for some further action in terms of the US and other countries at the OECD in terms of rules on perhaps minimum rates of corporation tax, digital services taxes. Increasingly, these are issues which cut across global trade as well. So I think it's fair to say there are still concerns about protectionism, still concerns about dumping of goods. The EU and others will look to strengthen their toolboxes through things like trade remedies to try and be ready for that situation. Of course, the Trade Act just got royal assent in the UK this week. And one of the consequences of that will be to make any potential deal between the UK and China in the future perhaps a little bit more difficult to get through Parliament.
Lovely. And I think that's where we will leave the discussions for today. So many thanks for joining us, William.
Thank you. Pleasure as always.
And also thanks to you too, Aidan. And good luck at the race tomorrow, although it will have already finished by the time this is out. But good luck tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Williams. William, what is the collective noun for a pair of Williams?
Will I, no. Maybe?
Will I? Will I am. Mm. There you go. Moving on. Thank you.
Geniuses of Williams. That's
right. Stop the recording.
Yes. So if you want to find out
in the afternoon again.
So if you want to find out more about what we've covered here today, you can visit us at brc.org.uk. You can also continue the conversation with us on Twitter, where you can find William at William_Bain and Aidan at Michael Aidan. I think that's right, guys. Is that right?
It is. Well done, you.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. And thanks again to the listener for tuning in. From all of us here, that's goodbye for now.